This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
This is Brian Wheeler, Executive Director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this audio recording. Since 2005, Charlottesville Tomorrow has been capturing, analyzing, and sharing community news from important meetings and presentations like this one. We couldn't do it without the support of our generous donors. As someone who listens to our podcast, if you have not done so already, I hope you will join the many other community members who have made a charitable gift to support our work. Visit our website at seavilletomorrow.org and click on the donation button for more information. Thanks again for listening and for getting engaged in our community. On March 17, 2011, about 100 people gathered in Lane Auditorium at the Albemarle County Office Building for a forum on local sustainability initiatives. The event was sponsored by the Jefferson Area Tea Party. Featured speakers included Tom DeWeese and Charles Baddig. DeWeese is founder and president of the American Policy Center, a conservative think tank located in Northern Virginia that promotes free enterprise and limited government regulations. Baddig is an Albemarle County resident and retired anesthesiologist. He warned the audience about an international sustainability agenda. He says Albemarle County, the city of Charlottesville, and the University of Virginia are all pursuing to the detriment of personal freedoms and individual property rights. This recording by Charlottesville Tomorrow begins with Carol Thorpe, chairwoman of the Jefferson Area Tea Party.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. On behalf of the Jefferson Area Tea Party here in Charlottesville, my name is Carol Thorpe, and I'm the proud chairwoman of the Jefferson Area Tea Party. Appreciate everybody coming out this evening and spending part of your St. Patrick's Day with us. It was funny, I thought on the way over here, I thought it was rather poetic that on the same day St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, we're here in an effort to begin to drive some snakes out of our own community. So, how apropos. Speaking of which, everybody, or hopefully everybody, was given a little piece of paper with a number and a shamrock on it when you came in. That is for a drawing. Tom DeWeese has generously donated a hardcover copy of his book, and we'll be having a drawing for that toward the end of the evening. You don't need to write your name or rip that paper or anything. Just hold on to it, and then we'll do the drawing for the number. If you didn't get a number, please see Nancy over there, and she'll be happy to give you one. Before we begin, I wanted to just review a couple of housekeeping items. Restrooms are available outside the auditorium doors and to the left. There's also a water fountain out there if you need it. In case of fire or emergency, you can exit through the doors in which you came. I feel like an airline attendant. And go straight through to the doors. The main doors are locked from the outside, but we can get out that way. So if we, I'm not anticipating any problems, but if we do, that would be the easiest way to exit. If you wish to take pictures, that's fine. We would ask you please refrain from using a flash so as not to disrupt our presenters. And if you would, if you haven't done so already, kindly please silence the ringing device on your cell phone so as not to interrupt the presentation. Did I leave out anything? I think that's pretty much it. and forgive me, I'm getting over a bit of an illness, so I apologize. My voice is sort of B. Arthur-esque tonight, and hopefully you can hear me anyway. Last September, I had gone to the Richmond Convention Center to attend the Virginia Liberty Fest that was presented by the Virginia Campaign for Liberty. The forum was entitled State Sovereignty in a Republic. Now, I went primarily to see the keynote speaker for that event, and that was Judge Andrew Napolitano. And, of course, there were several other speakers connected with the event as well. And local radio host Rob Schilling had gone down there to serve as MC for the event. Now, I'm happy to report that Judge Napolitano was typically great, as I hoped and thought he would be. But when I left the event, what really blew me away was the presentation by this evening's featured presenter, Tom DeWeese. I listened with amazement as Tom talked about the organization of ICLEI, of UN Agenda 21. And I must confess, I didn't know a darn thing about it coming in the door. But by the time Tom had finished speaking, I knew plenty, and I knew I had to learn plenty more about it. So I had found Rob at the end of the event, and I talked to him, and I said, you know what? I said, we need to get Tom DeWeese to come to Charlottesville. I want people to hear what you and I heard today. And so Tom has very graciously come here at his own expense today to come to speak with us about the ICLEI organization, Agenda 21, and his efforts. And he's been doing this for over 10 years. I know, in fact, it might be close to 20 that he's been working on this. So it sounds like the newest fad, and yet Tom was one of the first guys to the party. So again, I'm thrilled to have him here this evening. Later on this evening, you will also be hearing from Dr. Charles Battig. Charles is a member of the Jefferson Area Tea Party. He's also a very distinguished scientist. He will be presenting information that to complement Tom's, but also to let you know more of what's going on the local level with this. When I attended the Virginia Liberty Fest and I looked at a brochure that Tom DeWeese had handed out, it listed 600 dues-paying global members of ICLEI. And so, naturally curious, I scanned the list alphabetically. Well, I saw the city of Charlottesville, and that didn't surprise me a whole lot. But I was very surprised to see Albemarle County. And so what I did for tonight was I invited the 11 members of both Charlottesville City Council and Albemarle Board of Supervisors to attend this evening. Several of the folks had family obligations and were out of town, had other things. But we do have a couple representatives from the Board of Supervisors here tonight. I also understand that Councillor Hooja from the City Council, if he gets out of a meeting on time, will try to attend this evening as well. So that's a good start. But, you know, we're going to find out from Charles, you know, kind of how this program came to our area. And I'm speaking for myself personally. I'm not looking to condemn or to scold people who may have voted to get it in here to begin with. I'm not sure they had all the information that we're getting now either, but I think that the most important thing to do is to go from here onward and say, now that we do have this information, now that you are aware of what's going on, you as our elected officials, we'd like for you to take a second look at this, and hopefully the conclusion will be that we can find other ways to handle our environmental initiatives in this community without the participation of ICLEI. So anyway, you folks didn't come here to see me tonight, but I want to thank you all again very much for coming. Let me start by introducing Tom DeWeese. As I said, Tom has been a stalwart in this battle for a number of years. He is a leading advocate for individual liberty, for free enterprise, private property rights, personal privacy, back to basics education, and most importantly, American sovereignty and independence, which I think is something we all hold near and dear. For 40 years, he's been a businessman, a grassroots activist, and I'm just thrilled to have him here this evening. He's authored a new book that's called Now Tell Me I Was Wrong. As I said, that will be drawing for a hardcover copy of that book later this evening. For those of you who aren't lucky enough to get one, because we're only giving away one, the books will be available this evening in the lobby following the presentation. Tom will be happy to talk with you, autograph a book for you, and you'll be able to speak to Dr. Battig as well. So, again, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Tom DeWeese.
Ladies and gentlemen, I believe that the American people and their every action are being ruled, regulated, restricted, licensed, registered, directed, checked, inspected, measured, numbered, counted, rated, stamped, censored, authorized, admonished, refused, prevented, drilled, indoctrinated, monopolized, extorted, robbed, hoaxed, fined, harassed, disarmed, dishonored, fleeced, exploited, assessed, and taxed to the point of suffocation and desperation. America is drowning in a sea of rules and regulations, particularly under the excuse of protecting the environment. There is a new language taking over government. The typical city council meeting discusses comprehensive development, density, historic preservation, and partnerships between the city and private business. Civic leaders organize community meetings run by facilitators as they outline a vision for the town enforced by consensus. free trade, social justice, consensus, carbon footprints, partnerships, preservation, stakeholders, land use, environmental protection, development, diversity, visioning, open space, heritage, comprehensive planning, critical thinking, and community service are all part of the new language. But what are they really talking about? What mental pictures come to mind when those words are used? The language is being changed and manipulated to quietly implement a very destructive policy, one outlined in a UN soft law policy, soft law meaning it wasn't a treaty, called Agenda 21, first revealed to the public at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. The working name in local, state, and federal government is sustainable development. The term sustainable development was born on the pages of the United Nations document called Our Common Future, the official report of the 1987 UN World Commission on Environment and Development. As a result of this report, for the first time, the use of environmental protection and human development was tied to the age-old socialist goals of international redistribution of the wealth. And that is the key to understanding the true purpose of sustainable development and all of its policies, control of all facets of the economy. At the 1992 Rio Summit, President George H.W. Bush, in signing the document, committed the U.S. to implement the policies of Agenda 21. In 1996, President Bill Clinton, in compliance with Agenda 21, created the President's Council on Sustainable Development. Now, you might remember a great deal of discussion during the Clinton administration about the idea of a reinvention of government. Vice President Al Gore was put in charge of the reinvention. The reinvention, of course, was sustainable development. The President's Council, and its purpose was to translate the guidelines of Agenda 21 into public policy to be administered by the federal government. And that has become the ruling authority through which a UN plan, Agenda 21, has become unquestioned U.S. policy throughout the nation. Since then, rather than good management of resources, sustainable development has come to mean denied use of land and resources locked away from human hands. Moreover, it has become a code word for an entire economic and social agenda. This new political agenda is fast becoming a revolution, touching every aspect of our businesses, of our public education system, of our private property, our families, and our individual lives. It is now the official policy of the United States, put in force by literally every department of the government. It is the official policy of every state government and nearly every city, town, and county in the nation. Still, we are told by proponents that sustainable development is nothing more than good environmental stewardship and that it is locally driven. To accept that is a serious and dangerous mistake. So what is sustainable development? Regardless of what local planning groups tell you, the root of sustainable development is about a planned central economy and redistribution of the wealth on a local, state, national, and international level. The process by which it has been implemented creates a matrix of locked away land, of severe land use controls, controls of energy and energy production, control of transportation, control of industry, control of food production, control of development, control of water availability, and control of population size and growth. Most of their policies and regulations are issued under the excuse of protecting the environment. This is the process through which America is being transformed. It is what your elected officials are really doing as they use terms like comprehensive development plans, energy audits, open space, and historic preservation. This is Agenda 21 and sustainable development. The sustainable development logo and you have a copy of it in your program. The three connecting circles that you see. You see that in your program. These three connecting circles, social equity, economic prosperity, and ecological integrity, are known commonly as the three E's. I will tell you straight out, if you fail to grasp the social equity aspect of sustainable development, then you simply have no grasp of this issue, period. Social equity is based on a demand for social justice. Social justice is described as the right and opportunity of all people to, quote, benefit equally from the resources afforded us by society and the environment. Redistribution of the wealth. Most recently, the theory of social justice has been used to justify government takeover of health care. Simply run a Google search of sustainable medicine, and you will find the basics for Obamacare. This is the root of it. And by the way, Karl Marx was the first to coin the phrase social justice. Today, the phrase is used throughout sustainableist literature. The sustainableist system is based on the principle that individuals must give up selfish wants for the needs of the common good or the community. This is the same policy behind the push to eliminate our nation's borders to allow the migration of those from other nations into the United States to share our individually created wealth and our taxpayer-paid government social programs. Borders, they say, stop the natural migration of the human race. National sovereignty, they say, is a social injustice. According to the sustainableists, it is a social injustice for some to have prosperity if others do not. It is a social injustice for some to be bosses and others to be merely workers. Under the sustainableist system, private property is an evil that is used simply to create wealth for a few. So too is business ownership. Profits, they tell us, are made at the expense of the people. In short, social equity is a forced utopia with promises of health care for all, jobs for all, housing for all, and equality for all. So the reason the government refuses to secure our borders is because it is committed to imposing sustainable development. The reason Congress refused to listen to your pleas against centralized health care is because it is committed to sustainable development. The reason our local governments are imposing redevelopment and comprehensive development plans that include public housing projects, forced open space, and restrictions and controls on energy and water and population growth is because of sustainable development's social equity plank. This is why we say that sustainable development is at the root of literally all other issues we are fighting. Economic prosperity, the second circle. Sustainable development's economic policy is based on one overriding premise, that the wealth of the world was made at the expense of the poor. It dictates that if the conditions of the poor are to be improved, wealth must first be taken from the rich. You, by the way, are the rich. Keep that in mind. Consequently, sustainable development's economic policy is based not on private enterprise and open markets, but on public-private partnerships, or government-sanctioned monopolies. And I'll give you many, many more details on public-private partnerships in a couple of minutes. And the third plank, ecological integrity. To understand the power of the transformation of society under sustainable development, consider this quote from the UN's Biodiversity Treaty, which was also introduced at the 1992 Earth Summit. Quote, "Nature has an integral set of different values, cultural, spiritual, and material, where humans are but one strand in nature's web, and all living creatures are considered equal. Therefore, the natural way is the right way, and human activity should be molded along nature's rhythms." This quote lays down the ground rules for the entire sustainable development agenda. It says humans are nothing special, just one strand in the nature of things, or put another way, humans are simply a biological resource. Sustainableist policy is to oversee any issue in which man interacts with nature, which of course is literally everything. This is necessary, sustainableists say, because humans only defile nature. In other words, sustainableists view man as nothing more than a swarm of locusts which swoops down on nature and sucks it clean until there's nothing left. Nothing good comes from man, according to sustainableist doctrine. Do you think you own and control your private property? Then consider this quote from the report of the 1976 UN's Habitat I conference, which said, quote, "Land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, therefore contributes to social injustice," end quote. The fact is, Agenda 21 is a blueprint to completely change our society to a top-down, planned central economy in a strange mixture of socialism, fascism, and corporatism. To convince Americans to accept it required something that we would have to sacrifice our natural rights voluntarily. How would we do that? The answer was environmental Armageddon. You must sacrifice freedom to protect the planet. It's urgent, we're told. So the urgency is on. Global warming and climate change are feeding the hysteria. There's no time to consider things like individual concerns, wants and needs. Selfish, cries the sustainableist. We must save the environment. Go green. Get out of your car. Stop using energy. Sacrifice. Cut your carbon footprint or perish. And so, federal and state governments, working hand in hand with a horde of non-governmental organizations, private groups with personal political agendas, force passage of rules and regulations that are passed down to local communities. But, say your local officials, none of that UN socialist stuff is true. Just conspiracy theories of right-wing radicals. We're just creating the tools necessary in a local effort to manage growth and development for our community, they say. Have you heard these? Then consider this quote from J. Gary Lawrence, a planner for the city of Seattle and an advisor to the President's Council on Sustainable Development. He said, quote, "Participating in a UN advocating planning process would very likely bring out many who would actively work to defeat any elected official, undertaking local Agenda 21. So we will call our process something else, such as comprehensive planning, growth management, or smart growth," end quote. Local indeed. Sustainable development is the process by which America is being reorganized around a central principle of state collectivism using the environment as bait. The best way to understand what sustainable development actually is can be found by discovering what is not sustainable. Maurice Strong, Secretary General of the UN's Earth Summit in 1992, said, quote, "Current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class," that's you again, "involving high meat intake, use of fossil fuels, appliances, home and work air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable." So how is this wrenching transformation being put into place? Well, there are four very specific routes being used. In the rural areas, it's called the Wildlands Project. In the cities, it's called smart growth. In business, it's called public-private partnerships. And in government, it's called stakeholder councils and non-elected boards and regional government, or reinvented government. Well, the Wildlands Project was the brainchild of radical Earth First founder Dave Foreman. And it literally calls for the rewilding of 50% of all the land in every state back to the way it was before Christopher Columbus set foot here. In 1983, when Foreman first dreamed up the scheme for the Wildlands Project, he said, quote, "It is not enough to preserve the roadless, undeveloped country remaining. We must recreate wilderness in large regions, move out the cars and civilized people, dismantle the roads and dams, reclaim the plowed lands and clear cuts, and reintroduce extirpated species." Destruction of human civilization was his goal. In reality, the Wildlands Project is a diabolical plan to herd people off the rural lands and into human settlements, cities. Crazy, you say? Yeah. Impossible? Not so fast. From the demented mind of Dave Foreman, the plan became the blueprint for the UN's Biodiversity Treaty. So now the scheme is international in scope with the power of law. And your elected officials, right here on the local level, are helping to implement this insanity, whether they know it or not. Yet they are quick to deny that any such ideas have their origins on the international level. They accuse me of wearing tinfoil hats and hearing voices. Well, here's a voice I hear. Again, Maurice Strong said at the UN's Earth Summit, quote, "Isn't the only hope for the planet that the industrialized nations collapse? Isn't it our responsibility to bring that about?" And that's the true agenda we face. But how do you remove people from the land? One step at a time. There are many tools in place to stop human activity and grow the reserve. Push back livestock access to riverbanks on ranches and farms. It becomes more difficult and more expensive to run the farm. Eventually, it goes out of business. Lock away natural resources by creating more national parks. It shuts down the mines, and they go out of business. Call every mosquito-infested swamp and occasional mud puddle a wetlands, and ban any development around it. Invent a spotted owl shortage and pretend it can't live in a forest where timber is cut. Shut off the forest. Then, when no trees are cut, there's nothing to feed the mills, and then there are no jobs, and they go out of business. In the East, the land control device most preferred is called a conservation easement. Farmers are in a desperate situation. They have their land. It's their only asset in many cases. Many decide to sell the land to developers. At least he has something to show for the land and for his family. But the sustainabilists hate development and want to stop it at any cost. So they devise a plan supposedly to help the farmer keep his land and keep farming, the conservation easement. The farmer may be paid a sum of money and will get tax breaks just for signing an easement, and he will, as long as he follows certain rules and won't sell it to developers. In many cases, they also offer extra cash to sell their development rights, thus assuring that he won't sell to developers. All is well for the farmer, so he thinks. In reality, what he has done is basically given his property away to an entity that controls the conservation easement, usually it's an environmental group like the Nature Conservancy, which is little more than a money-laundering real estate firm posing as an environmental group. Moreover, as part of the agreement, they have severe restrictions on the way they can farm the land. They are forced to use strict sustainable development farming rules that restrict the kinds of chemicals they may use, the amount of water they may apply, and other energy-reducing processes. They may even be restricted by what crops they can grow, and each of these restrictions force up the cost of growing the crops, making it harder to compete in the market. Finally, they find that their land is now worthless because they can't sell it, because no one will buy it with the easement restrictions attached. In the end, it will all transfer to the environmental group who will lock it away for good. Moreover, When the conservation easement is signed, the land is taken off the tax base for the community. With enough land off the rolls, the taxes for everyone else must go up dramatically. And by the way, so far, Virginia brags that it has locked away 78,713 acres per year between 2001 and 2009. And they predict another 400,000 acres by 2014. It represents 14.6% of the state land area and growing. In Fauquier County, where I reside, 33% of the land is now in conservation easements. But it's for the farmer. Isn't it strange to find that only 2% of that 33% is farmland? The rest is the property of the rich landed gentry, all the horsey people, who have found a way not to pay taxes on their property, shifting the tax burden to the rest of us. They love sustainable development, and they use their power and their influence in local government to help force its implementation. Other parts of the Wildlands Project come in many names and many programs. Heritage areas, land management, rails to trails, open space, wolf and bear reintroduction, and many more. Each of these programs is designed to make it just a little harder to live on the land, a little more expensive, a little more hopeless. In reality, the process is simply herding people into those human habitat areas. East of the Mississippi, there are at least 9 wildlands projects covering Maine, Pennsylvania, New York, West Virginia, Tennessee, North and South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, and of course, Virginia. Watch for the names of such projects like the Chesapeake Bay Watershed, Appalachian Restoration Project, and Piedmont Wildlands Project. The second path to sustainable development is called smart growth. They put a line around the city and they tell you no growth can take place outside of that line. Urban sprawl, they say disdainfully. They refuse to build more roads as a ploy to get you out of your car and into public transportation. Restricting mobility. New highways, they say, are feeders to more development. They even stop the widening of existing roads for the same reason. So roads become overcrowded in gridlock, and they blame development. In many smart growth cities like San Francisco, new apartment buildings now have no garages or parking lots. We don't want any stinking cars. Smart growth creates an unnatural restriction on land, on space inside the controlled city limits. So there is a shortage of houses. And what happens? Prices go up. That means populations will have to be controlled because now there is a shortage of land. Energy and water use is tightly controlled. Smart growth advocates force individuals to live in denser communities that take up smaller tracts of land per housing unit. Planning advocates and government bureaucrats are forcing such planned communities across the state and nation, and those put severe controls on private property. In fact, there can be no private property in a smart growth community. You might get to pay the mortgage, but that's about it. The third way to sustainable development, inside the human habitat areas, our cities and our towns, government is steadily being controlled by an elite ruling class called stakeholder councils. These are mostly non-governmental organizations or NGOs who, like thieves in the night, just show up to stake their claim to enforce their private agenda on you. The function of legitimate elected government within the sustainable system is fast becoming little more than the rubber stamp to create and enforce the dictates of the councils. The councils are unelected, but all powerful, controlled by a small minority in the community. They control almost all business decisions. They can dictate the kind of building materials you may use for your home or whether you can build on your property at all. They decide if roads are to be built, how much water can be used, how downtown will look, how neighborhoods will be built. These non-elected councils fit almost perfectly the definition of a state Soviet, a system of councils that report to an apex council and then implement a predetermined outcome. Soviets are the operating mechanism of a government-controlled economy, the exact opposite of a constitutional republic. The fourth path to sustainable development, as I mentioned, is public-private partnerships. Many public-private partnerships are nothing more than government-sanctioned monopolies in which a few businesses are granted special favors like tax breaks, the power of eminent domain, non-compete clauses, and specific guarantees for return on their investments. That means they can charge what they want and they can use the power of government to put their competition out of business. And you hear the propaganda of the public-private partnerships nightly on your television as their commercials tell you over and over and over again to go green. And they use Congress to build more power and more wealth. Such is the reality of the green industry. In fact, there would be no green industry if not for the billions of dollars in grant money shelled out to the partnerships to develop alternative energy schemes. Alternative energy amounts to less than 1% of our energy needs. And for every green job created, two in legitimate industry are lost because of green rules and regulations. But it's highly profitable for those industries taking the tax money through the public-private partnerships. And the public-private partnerships are taking over highways and local water treatment plants and communities across the nation. It is not free enterprise, but a Mussolini-style fascism that will only lead to tyranny. And it's all driven by the Agenda 21 blueprint of sustainable development. Truly, sustainable development is designed to change our way of life. Local mayors are a prime target of international forces. Here's how. In June of 2005, the UN set out to recruit the nation's mayors to directly impose sustainable development policy into our local communities. The mayors were invited to attend the UN's World Environment Day conference in San Francisco. As part of their participation, the mayors were pressed to commit to specific legislation and policy goals by signing a slate of UN accords. One document signed by the mayors was called the Urban Environment Accords. The document includes exactly 21 specific actions, as in Agenda 21, for the mayors to take, controlled by a timetable for implementation. The document included action items to enforce the increase of renewable energy and the reduction of energy consumption. Perhaps the most egregious action item offered in the Urban Environment Accords dealt with the topic of water. Action item number 19 called for adoption and implementation of a policy to reduce individual water consumption. The UN document begins by stating, quote, cities with potable water consumption greater than 100 liters per capita per day will adopt and implement policies to reduce consumption by 10% by 2015. The 100 liter figure was a very clever use of numbers to vastly reduce water consumption. You must be aware that 100 liters is equal to about 26 gallons per person per day. According to the UN, every person should have less than 26 gallons each day to drink, bathe, flush toilets, wash clothes, water lawns, wash dishes, cook, take care of pets, and more. But according to the U.S. Geological Survey, Americans actually need about 100 gallons per day to perform these basic life functions. The use of the 100 liters number versus 100 gallons is a direct attempt to mislead and actually cut water use by 75%. Consider also that there is no specific water shortage in most of the United States. Water is not an international issue. It is a very local one. These are the policies your elected officials are implementing as they keep telling you it's all a local idea. Many Americans ask how dangerous international policies can suddenly turn up in local government, all seemingly uniform to those in communities across the nation and around the globe. The answer? Medically. A nonprofit, private foundation dedicated to helping your mayor implement all of his promises. Originally known as the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, ICLEI, today the group simply calls itself ICLEI Local Governments for Sustainability. They got the word international out of there. In 1992, ICLEI was one of the groups instrumental in creating Agenda 21. The group's mission now is to push local communities to regulate the environment, and it's having a tremendous success. ICLEI is now operating in more than 600 cities in all 50 states. The group is shooting for 1,000 cities in the next 3 years. Climate change, of course, is the ICLEI mantra. ICLEI's programs are designed to decrease each city's carbon footprint, no matter what it costs the taxpayers. Here's just some of the programs ICLEI provides cities and towns in order to spread their own particular political agenda in the name of community service and environmental protection. Software products and associated training, access to a network of experts, newsletters, conferences, and training workshops, toolkits, online resources, case studies, fact sheets, policy, and practice manuals. And then there's notification of relevant grant opportunities. This is the important one, money, which comes with severe strings attached. Around the nation, ICLEI partners with other established organizations like the American Planning Association and the International City-County Management Association, the ICMA. And then there's the Renaissance Planning Group. These groups and hundreds more like them work hand in hand with groups like the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the National Governors Association, the National League of Cities, the National Association of County Administrators, and more that your elected representatives probably belong to. That's how these policies quickly spread across the nation as enforced policy. And what is the result of ICLEI's efforts in Virginia? In 2007, the House of Delegates passed HB 3202, mandating that counties establish development plans that include high-density urban development areas, in short, sustainable development. That law is now being used as a weapon to force sustainable development at a rapid pace across the state. And in August of this year, ICLEI announced that it had teamed up with the Virginia Municipal League to promote greener communities. The partnership is called Go Green Virginia, and they have chosen 4 communities as practice to participate in the Green Community Challenge, including Norfolk, Blacksburg, Loudoun County, and the city of Roanoke. Density development, as mandated by HB 3202, is at the root of these plans. In Chesterfield County, residents for the whole array of suspects are descending on them to create the Chesterfield County Comprehensive Land Use Plan. The Renaissance Planning Group is currently working with the American Planning Association and the ICMA, and they've set up a steering committee that is basically composed of their own people. One of their efforts is called Countryside Zoning. It creates buffer zones between high-density urban areas right out of the Wildlands Project. Property values will go down. Conservation easements will be enforced, and private property rights will be extinguished. Dave Foreman's demented dream lives on in Chesterfield County. Warrenton, Virginia, is also an ICLEI partner. Warrenton documents reveal exactly what these other communities will experience. The Warrenton Green Plan, found on the town website, openly discusses its connection with ICLEI. The plan establishes quotas for electrical use and for heating and cooling pumps, and water use, weatherization of existing buildings, replacing of incandescent light bulbs, and on and on. It's all out of the master plan of the ICLEI playbook. But the misery is in the details that are not stated in the outline. Specifically, after the community sets the goals or the standards, how do they achieve them? Eventually, those standards will become law, regulations which you will have to comply. Energy reduction is the key. The plan mentions energy audits and building reviews. That means that government bureaucrats will come into your home or your office building and determine the amount of potential energy you should have. You will be given a list of recommendations necessary to bring your home into compliance. These may include the need for a new roof or new energy-efficient appliances or new windows, etc. In Oakland, California, the City Council did just these things, and the result was an average cost to every single homeowner of at least $35,000 to comply. And if you don't comply, you will be fined or possibly not able to sell your home until you do. Across the nation, including right here in Charlottesville, power companies are enforcing the use of smart meters. These meters contain RFID chips. The technology enables the power company to keep track of how much power you are using and control and regulate and ration your use of this electricity. They will set the temperature in your home. And if they decide you are using too much hot water for your shower or your washing machines or too much air conditioning or electricity, it will be automatically turned down. Moreover, a future goal by the year 2012, not far off, is to have all appliances replaced with those containing the same RFID chips, which the smart meters will have and they will speak to for more regulations and controls. Welcome to the utopia of sustainable development. This is Big Brother at its worst. And its planned control enforced by your local leaders and representatives in partnership with ICLEI, an organization whose vice chairman, Harvey Revin, said, quote, "Individual rights will have to take a back seat to the collective." I ask you this. Would any of your elected officials admit to enforcing communism in your community? Of course not. Then why are they so eager to be in partnership with an organization which does? The United States is not a global village run by elders who hand down the rules from on high. We are a nation of individuals whose rights are supposed to be protected and guaranteed by the representatives we elect. We demand accountability from them. However, global forces which do not accept the unique American form of government sneak behind the curtain, avoiding controversy and honest debate. The only possible result can be the tyranny of a powerless electorate stripped of its rights, its property, and its self-determination. Global warming has been the excuse for the hysteria. But now, true science is beginning to show that this is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on human society. So if that's true, then there's no need for these dire policies that have us locking away land and living in high-density cracker boxes. We all want a clean environment. However, what we are objecting to here is not environmental protection, but the process that is being used in its name. Non-elected boards, councils, and regional governments appointed by an oligarchy answerable to no one is the perfect definition of a Soviet. And I assure you, we cannot restore the republic if our communities are little Soviets. Nor can we protect the environment if our economy is destroyed and free men are unable to make choices other than survival in a sustainableist tyranny. The sustainableists are using our carbon footprint as a measure of our guilt. The fact is, everything we do affects the environment, and one fact is for sure. If you have no carbon footprint, you are dead. In the name of conservation, we are experiencing a wrenching transformation of our nation into what can only lead to a new dark ages of pain and misery. Elected officials can no longer play ignorant about this policy. It is their duty to represent the people and protect them from these piranhas that are devouring our way of life. To save it, you must take action. and understand that the main battle is being fought not in Congress, but right here on the local level. Fight the creation of non-elected councils, commissions, or boards, because they can and will be used as a weapon against your ability to deal and reason with local government. Above all, refuse federal or state money or new sustainable programs and get rid of the old ones. And if ICLEI is now running things in your town, as they are, throw them out. Stop payment of dues. Disband anything they've built and start looking for some high-grade tar and feathers. Nameless, faceless bureaucrats wielding power in the back rooms, untouchable and unseen, is not freedom. The sustainables now haunt the upper levels of the federal government, our state houses, and our city councils' chambers. They have achieved many of their goals, but they have not yet won. And their arrogance and their impatience to force the policy into place is resulting in a stir of the American people. After 18 years of issuing warnings about Agenda 21, finally, opposition is being heard. In the past month, 6 weeks, 4 communities have taken action and revoked contracts with ICLEI, starting with Carroll County, Maryland, then Amador County, California, then Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, and just 1 week ago tonight, Edmond, Oklahoma, all throughout ICLEI. Their whole agenda is built on a house of cards that stands only when you are ignorant and compliant. Now is our time. Now is the time to write, speak out, protest, demand, demonstrate, refuse. As Gandhi said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then we win. Thank you.
Now you can see why I had to have Tom DeWeese come up here and speak to all of you. But we have more. Dr. Charles Battig, as I mentioned to you earlier, we are proud to have him as a member of the Jefferson Area Tea Party. Charles worked on the, he was the principal scientist in the biomedical monitoring systems as part of the Life Science Group in support of the Apollo Moon mission from 1962 to 1964. The wealth of people we have in this area is tremendous. Following his service as senior surgeon commander in the U.S. Public Health Service stationed at National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, in the biomedical engineering branch, Charles went into private practice in anesthesiology until he retired in 1990. Since moving to Charlottesville 10 years ago, he's been active in climate issues. He's going to be speaking with you this evening, in particular bringing the issue of Agenda 21 and ICLEI to the local level. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Charles Battig.
Thank you all. Tough act to follow, but it was no act, but information we needed to have. I'll start off by saying I'm going to be reading most of this because I'm dealing with what has happened here locally. I don't want to get the dates wrong and the people wrong, so we'll see if I can read most of this without stumbling over it and putting you to sleep. But first, on the St. Patrick's Day, let's all observe a moment of honor for the Emerald Isle. Why? February 25th, last month, the Irish folks went to the polls and voted out the ruling government. In doing so, they voted out the existing ruling coalition, including all members of the Green Party. So let us note that on this green day, the Emerald Isle is now a little bit less green by popular demand, a bit of irony. All right. Tom has given us an in-depth review of the origins of ICLEI and its participation in the drafting of the 1992 UN's Agenda 21. He has shown how sustainability has been elevated by ICLEI to benchmark status to be used by all governments in their official policy decisions. I will trace the history of ICLEI in our local city and county governments, and in doing so, I'll be quoting, perhaps endlessly, from official county documents posted online, which means you can go back and check yourself on all of this. The Board of Supervisors' involvement with ICLEI may have been an innocent response to outside pressures from activists within the local government or from governing organizations to which elected officials are automatically enrolled. They may have inherited these affiliations without knowing it or realizing the agendas inherent in them. The Virginia chapter of the American Planning Association has an ICLEI affiliation and is part of the Virginia State Climate Protection Network. Some members of the local board had questioned the wisdom of these actions along the way, but may have been convinced by others on the board to go along, to get along. My presentation is nonpartisan. If you read my letters in the Richmond Times or in the Daily Progress, you would be aware of my pointedly negative comments regarding our Republican governors' infatuation with wind and solar power. It is decidedly not my intent to disparage in any way sensible stewardship of our local environment. I will document the morphing of a 2007 benign statement of purpose by local government as to the virtues of going green and saving you money into the currently funded objectives of mandating your behavioral change. And they also will point out the enacting of county legislation to force your compliance with this new benchmark of sustainability. As this timeline is traced, note how the word voluntary becomes replaced by, quote, mandated behavior change in the documents of local government. Henry Lamb, in his August 2006 Agenda 21 and the United Nations report, noted that the model legislation produced by such organizations as the American Planning Association is designed to implement, quote, community sustainability principles of the 1995 UN Conference on Human Settlements. And in UN's eyes, they don't have cities, they have settlements. Communities are told to develop land use plans conforming to the principles originating in the international community. He points out often, quote, the role and influence of UN is minimized or denied, period. Especially at the local and state level, even the most active proponents of sustainable development are either unaware or deliberately deny that the process is related to the United Nations. I call that a sort of willful ignorance, perhaps. I can tell you firsthand, when I spoke before the Board of Supervisors here on February the 2nd, that was exactly the response I got. There were smiles, snickers, and denials that the UN had anything to do with our local county government. Supervisor Dennis Rooker managed to invoke for himself, at least, the image of Tea Party infiltration of county government, but certainly not the United Nations. How did ICLEI work its way into your local government? I encourage you once again, go online and confirm for yourselves the history of ICLEI's involvement is documented at the county's website. Read the County of Albemarle Executive Summary Reports of December 2007, February 2008, March 2009, and August 2009. ICLEI has its own website where the homepage lists numerous U.S. and foreign events and joint programs with the United Nations. Board of Supervisor members may have been hoodwinked into participation, but there is no factual basis anymore to deny the UN link. If you buy ICLEI, you get the whole ICLEI package. The February 2008 County Executive Summary recounts the county's involvement all the way back to 2004. So if you go to that point, you have a nice summary there, timeline beginning 2004. That year, the county executive signed an environmental management policy committing the county to pollution prevention and continual environmental improvement. Who could object to this? It's akin to the irresistible good feeling embodied in motherhood and apple pie. However, no definition of continual environmental improvement was given, nor how it was to be measured. In September 2006, an environmental compliance manager was hired. Later, the county partnered with Energy Star and set a goal of reducing internal energy use 30% by 2012. So, what is not to like so far? You're saving money for the taxpayer, and you can see that Energy Star plaque as you walk into this building from the parking lot. In February 2007, the Board of Supervisors unanimously supported pursuing the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design Certification for New Construction Projects, normally known as LEED. The basic level of this third-party-run certification process requires only 40 to 49 points out of 100 to qualify. The more expensive, and they admit it is more expensive, upfront construction costs are claimed to be recouped over the lifespan of the building. So far, nothing alarming, plus something worthwhile, and long as we stay with voluntary goals. It is in a December 2007 board meeting when Board of Supervisor member, Mr. Dennis Rooker, first presented, quote, a non-agenda item in which he asked the board to adopt a resolution entitled the U.S. Cool Counties Climate Stabilization Declaration, pledging to reduce both community, that's you folks, and the local government, operational greenhouse emissions reductions of 80% by 2050. Mr. David Slutsky seconded the motion. Why this magic and arbitrary number? And here the path to ICLEI begins. I wonder, was the public or community asked if they wished to participate in this pledge? Did the Board of Supervisors realize that in 2007, Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth had been adjudged as a political piece of propaganda in England by an English court? As documented in these 2007 Board of Supervisors meetings, Mr. Boyne expressed reservations about the lack of more information on this commitment and the concern that would be continuing requests for more money and staff. Mr. Dorey was also concerned with the issues of cost. The county executive, Mr. Richard Tucker, Jr., seemed to possess some scientific knowledge, allowing him to claim, quote, that with the 2050 timetable, he does not think there is anything here that will be difficult for the county to attain. Maybe because by 2050, he and the rest of Board of Supervisors will be long since out of office. Who knows? Mr. Slutsky assured the other board members, and this is particularly something I want you to remember, perhaps. His quote, Mr. Slutsky says, quote, there is nothing obligatory in this resolution. It is just a statement of purpose. How benign, how innocent sounding. Board of Supervisor member Ms. Sally Thomas noted that, quote, Albemarle is regarded as a leader in its greenness, and it would be a shame not to indicate that, end of quote. So a green Disney World-like image apparently trumps the nuisance of scientific analysis. Emissions of CO2 are a source of essential plant food and account for the greenness of the plant life in our environment. Current Board of Supervisors member Dwayne Snow knows that by professional training. In the end, all Board of Supervisors members at the time voted for the 2007 resolution. Go online if you wish. You can read the complete resolution with its dozen whereases and three declarations. Declaration number three includes urging Congress to raise car mileage standards. All right. The February 2008 executive summary, online, read it yourself, also contained a discussion heading titled Climate Change as a Critical Issue. The whole complex and unsettled science of climatology is presented simplistically in a space of a few sentences. County action is justified by reference to the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, and the Kyoto Protocol. The direct linkage between human CO2 production and significant climate change is slipped in as an assumption for which no scientific evidence is presented there. This is sham science. President Clinton, if you remember, never submitted the Kyoto Protocol for Senate ratification. In spite of official non-participation in Kyoto, the U.S. has reduced its emissions of CO2 8% below 2000 levels. But the rest of the world, what have they done? They have risen more than 25% since 2000. China in 2010 accounted for approximately 26% of global emissions, the U.S. about 15%. All right, here comes the inevitable. Yes, there has been global warming since the last ice age ended about 10,000 years ago. Yes, there has been global warming since the Little Ice Age ended over 200 years ago. Yes, there has been global warming, global cooling, global climate change, global climate weirdness, global climate disruption, and global climate challenges ever since the origins of the Earth. We live on a planet in constant change. The ground beneath our feet is in motion. The recent tragic earthquakes in Japan, New Zealand, and Chile are graphic evidence. Can you imagine what our Ice Age relatives thought? Peeked out the cave and saw over a mile-high sheet of ice in front of them. Did they have a climate crisis? You bet they did. It was unique in their history. So we have in each age had unique challenges. However, what is unique now is that climate is big business, a new dogma, a new source for taxation, a source for university grant applications, a new tool for governmental control of you. Clean and green are now market-driven, merchandising mottos used to sell you stuff. Just what is the definition of green? I don't know. Clean seems to mean anything not producing carbon dioxide. I hope that the true believers are all holding their collective breaths and not polluting our atmosphere by exhaling, because that's 4% CO2 right there. Italy makes its official appearance in the county records in February 2008. At this Board of Supervisors meeting, a strategic plan and proposed strategy are introduced, and here appears the statement. Here is the critical statement. Quote, staff recommends that the county follow the milestones outlined in the International Council for Local Initiatives by all of you know that is ICLEI now, right? So staff recommends the county join ICLEI. These local initiatives include a 5-milestone process, which are consistent with the Cool Counties policies, end quote. And the Cool Counties came about in December 2007. All right. Were these nebulous staff members environmental activists rather than impartial support staff? Who hired them? I don't know. Did the Board of Supervisors know? I don't know. Further in that report is a self-serving statement that, once again, it's good to be staff around here apparently, staff recommends that the Board approving staff, sort of self-referential, so the staff recommends the Board approving staff moving forward with the implementation of a climate protection program, whatever that is. Anybody can tell me how you protect the climate and from what? I have no idea. Was any independent review ordered by the Board of Supervisors to evaluate the scientific and cost effectiveness of these staff conclusions and recommendations? How does one define the climate, protect the climate, and from what? The current ongoing multiple reviews of the present water reservoir issue may or not be excessive, but it shows that the independent technical review process is certainly known to the Board of Supervisors. Did they use it for the ICLEI involvement? I see no evidence of it, and I stand to be corrected. So what are these ICLEI-mandated 5 milestones to which the Board of Supervisors committed you and the county? They are, one, conduct a baseline emissions inventory. 2, set a target for greenhouse gas reduction. 3, establish a local action plan. 4, implement the local action plan. 5, assess, report, and modify the local action plan. Examples of climate protection efforts are given as land use planning, transportation planning, energy efficiency, green power, green building, recycling, and education. Note that land use was the first of their chosen words. What about cost? The same staff documented the need of an additional full-time employee, cost to be determined. The county continues to pay ICLEI $1,200 a year for membership. For this modest price, ICLEI and its activist agenda is given a voice in your local government, both directly and behind the scenes. The $1,200 per year is not the only county cost. There are staff costs and policy-driven costs as well, which probably far exceed the trivial $1,200. I wonder, anybody here can tell me, is staff going to the ICLEI conference at the Virginia Military Institute next month? If so, at what county or city cost? All right. So in February 2009, moving along, the county completed step 1 of these ICLEI mandates. There are the five of them. Step one, and they published the County of Albemarle, Virginia Emissions Baseline Report for the year 2000. This document is available online. It's 57 pages long. The executive summary contains a supposedly scientific justification for the premise of a unique climate problem that is man-made and directly related to human use of fossil fuels and CO2 production. The UN's IPCC is invoked as authority, including its predictions of 1 to 4 degrees Celsius increase in global temperatures over the next 100 years. Sorry, folks. The fact is the IPCC does not issue climate predictions. They are very careful in their own literature to talk of scenarios, very clever terminology, because these are games, computer games based on multiple computer models. So they're not predicting. They're telling you what might happen if this would happen if our models were correct. Okay? The 2001, which is the third IPCC report, contains the explicit disclaimer on page 74. You can go look it up. It ends with, therefore, the long-term production of future climate states is not possible. Right? Their authority for the county doing all this is IPCC. IPCC in its own literature says, we cannot predict the future climate, period. It's a good scientist who wrote that section. This fact seems unrecognized by ICLEI, the county, and the office of this baseline report. It is routinely ignored in climate activist literature. The 2000 IPCC report, which is the latest one of 2007, notes that their climate models may be wrong, and they don't know how badly wrong. At least some of the stuff in there is quite honest. It doesn't, by the time it gets to an executive summary, the local newspaper picks it up, and the advocates quote this, the language changes dramatically. So the same 2009 baseline submission report notes in its executive summary that the baseline data here was, somebody didn't know that data is plural, so data were analyzed, using the clean air and climate protection software developed by ICLEI. So when you hire ICLEI, use their computer program, put two ICLEI members on the team, you get what? You get ICLEI results. There is a table in the report listing the six critical air pollutants, but no mention that the U.S. EPA reports the emissions of these six pollutants have fallen over 50% since 1980. This ICLEI report correctly notes that water vapor is the most abundant and important greenhouse gas. They got that right, because it is almost 99% naturally occurring and cannot be controlled by greenhouse gas reduction measures, it is therefore, quote unquote, not assessed in the report. So in ICLEI's view of science, if the most important factor cannot be altered, just ignore it. Besides, governments have not yet figured out how to tax water vapor. It is easier to tax your electric bill. Just how important is water vapor? Well, it's estimated that water vapor in the form of clouds and rain accounts for about 95% of the so-called greenhouse gas effect. All of man-made CO2 is calculated as producing about 0.1% of the greenhouse gas effect, right? The rest is from natural causes. Think of that as you exhale water vapor and CO2 in this auditorium with each breath. So what about all these scary predictions of unique and disastrous sea level rise, temperature rise, increased illness, changes in rainfall patterns, notice and report? None of these extreme computer predictions has yet come to pass in the real world. They are guesses from computer models. And the problem is that there is no grand theory of climate. There's nothing to model. There is too much going on there. So you build a computer model, you're biting off a small piece of it and modeling it and say, aha, see. But you're not seeing the whole picture. The knowledge does not yet exist to computer model all the relevant factors, their interactions, and their relative impacts over time. The UN uses over 20 different computer models and averages them in hopes the result comes out meaningful. I must tell you, a computer program is not reality, but a lot of people doing this stuff in universities and whatnot, I don't think look out the window. They have their computer, it says this, and that's what it is. All right. The IPCC itself has a real credibility problem because past climate-related statements, they've gotten sort of ahead of their own game, stuck their statements out there, which have been later debunked and then actually retracted. Some of them dealt with the glaciers melting in India, in the Himalayas, and other activist sort of comments which were revealed as such as that. They were nothing. The IPCC is not a scientific research organization. It is a gatherer of information. It was founded on the idea that man is causing man-made CO2, is causing climate change. So they have sort of a dedicated concept which they tend to support. They're not out there to find, quote-unquote, the scientific truth. Okay, let's meet the stakeholders. In the current context, these are the folks and organizations that may have a financial, intellectual, or emotional interest in your climate and behavioral future. Page 3 of this county emissions baseline reports 25 such individuals. Two individuals are listed as ICLEI officials. Dominion Power has two. American Electric Power has one, representative from an oil company and assortment of local government agencies. No Board of Supervisors member was listed. And there was no listing of somebody representing you, the taxpayer. The report speaks to emissions per county resident, including those unmentionable emissions of the cattle population. It is a bean counter's delight as it reduces emissions and consumptions to a per resident scale. The report concludes by noting that the next ICLEI step, number 3, is to establish a local action plan, which the county obligingly proceeds to do. I take a slight digression here, but it's part of the story. 2009, the county and city obtained an initial $500,000 grant from Southeast Energy Efficiency Alliance to fund, develop, and implement a comprehensive community-based energy efficiency program. It would include financing of property energy retrofits, named the Local Energy Alliance Program, LEAP, and perhaps you understand why I'm reading this. After a while, you get your LEAPs, LEADs, and LACs and all mixed up because there are all these acronyms. There are no end to them. Anyway, the Local Energy Alliance Program, LEAP, is described as a community-based nonprofit, even though the original press release noted that the grant was awarded to the city and the county, making its legal status a bit murky, at least to me. Their website lists the Board of Supervisor member Ann Malik, Board of Supervisor at the time David Slutsky, and Charlottesville Mayor David Norris on their Board of Directors. The UVA Community Credit Unit participates by providing loans under its Green Sense Lending Program. LEAP also acts to get homeowners their share of taxpayer subsidies in the form of energy rebates, and is now headed by the former Charlottesville City Climate Protection Program Coordinator, which I must say the city had leaped from environmental protection to bigger things, and that is into climate protection. In any event, she had left that position and now heads LEAP. To the extent that this is a voluntary program, cost-effective for those choosing to participate, and does not directly or indirectly add to the cost of county government policies or property taxes, there's little criticism other than the question, where does the money come from to pay all those free rebates? Hint, ultimately from your taxes and utility bills. So back now to step 3 of the ICLEI 5 milestones, and that is to establish a local action plan or a local climate action plan. The result of that effort was on display here in the county office building last month under the title, Carbon, Our Energy Future and You. This workshop was presented by the city, county, and UVA. It was advertised as a result of over 18 months, a year and a half, of efforts by more than 70 local participants. And what did the taxpayer get for all this effort and expenditures? Well, the language meisters, as I call them, have been at work. They dropped references to global warming and climate change, which I've shown you already was the initial reason given for action in favor of the new language of saving you money and new business opportunities. It's a new language. 5 areas were identified: the built environment, mobility, energy sourcing, materials, and landscape. For you who did not realize, perhaps, that setting your thermostat higher or lower would affect your utility bill, these folks were there to let you know if you turned it up, you'd pay more. If you turned it down, it would save you money. All right. Anyway, this all sounds innocent enough. However, The official press release for the event contains specific language of a different sort. In it, there now appear the terms environmental stewardship, and this is the official press release. These are not my words. The terms appear environmental stewardship, community vitality, sustainability assessments, social equity, energy self-sufficiency, and natural systems improvements. The concept, quote-unquote, of need to act is also introduced and indicates a shift from voluntary action to mandated action. The official press release notes, and I'm quoting here, the significant reductions being pursued cannot be achieved simply by switching individual light bulb. Tens of thousands of structures will need to be made more efficient. Hundreds of thousands of miles traveled will need to be done with less energy intensity. Tons of megawatts of energy. I admit I've been out of many years of my engineering training, but I didn't know that megawatts of energy were measured by the ton. But anyway, this is the official release. Tons of megawatts of energy will need to be obtained from cleaner sources. The preservation and management of our forests will need to be conducted. This is the beginning of the replacement of the carrot of cost saving with a stick of government mandates and needs to be. If you do not see the light and voluntarily do your part in reducing your allotted environmental impact, then the government will nudge you. We can remember the Boy Scout determined to do good, even if it means dragging the reluctant pedestrian across the street. Right? These folks mean nothing but well for you. I attended this workshop and commented on it elsewhere, but I wish to alert you to the claims of community support, because I think this is going to set the pattern for what comes in the future. About 93 people attended an interactive survey in which a set of pre-programmed questions were shown on the screen and then voted on electronically with little individual vote tabulators. I would like to know the makeup of this audience. Many were wearing name tags identifying themselves as participants in the work leading up to this community event. So if the 70-plus people and the steering committee members involved in crafting this event were in the audience, then the community event and its votes of support amounted to the advocates voting in favor of their own agendas. Their activist community is not necessarily the general community. When I spoke my allotted 3 minutes and a bit more on March 2nd right here to the Board of Supervisors, I presented each member with a copy of the publication, Observe Climate Change and the Negligible Global Effect of Greenhouse Gas Emission Limits in the State of Virginia. This 34-page scientific report from the Virginia-based Science and Public Policy Institute is available online. The policies of ICLEI, as embodied in the policies of the county, focus on emissions reductions based on concerns with climate change impacts. In brief, as the title of this paper indicates, Virginia greenhouse gas emissions have virtually no effect on the global climate. If today Virginians were not only to reduce, but totally eliminate all sources of energy use, no cell phones, no computers, no TV, no cars, no nothing, just go back to the Stone Age. All right? That's a pretty good reduction. We would achieve, according to this study, in 2050, that's the target date for the county, a global temperature reduction of about an unmeasurable and meaningless 0.002 degrees Celsius, right? I mean, the temperature between here and there is probably 0.002 degrees different. All right. Thought there's a green police coming. All right, so that would be total energy deprivation on our part. Well, China's emissions replace ours in less than 2 months, another finding in the study. So that's some deal. The refrain that the science is settled, or most scientists agree, is a frequently used ploy to avoid having to engage in scientific debate on climate issues. It is the county and city fallback position, I can tell you firsthand. But consensus proves nothing. Page 31 of the same report lists the fact that at least 800 Virginia scientists and over 30,000 U.S. scientists have signed a petition stating that the UN's human-caused global warming hypothesis is, quote, without scientific validity. A survey by the publication Scientific American last fall reported that 81% of the respondents consider the UN's IPCC, quote, a corrupt agency prone to groupthink with a political agenda. Sad to say, not one board of supervisor member thought my March 2nd presentation important enough or of concern to offer me a reply, comment, or question, either at that time or subsequently. Step 4 of the county adopted ICLEI 5 milestones is implement the local action plan. And if you're concerned about property rights and personal freedom of choice, here begins the really scary part of this probably too lengthy narrative. Try to keep it entertaining, maybe not. Anyway, the size of the stick awaiting those who do not heed the call of saving money by voluntary measures is now revealed, which brings us to the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, TJPDC. I don't know which is shorter to say. Anyway, it describes itself as coordinating planning across a wide variety of jurisdictions and regulatory agencies. Its website, which I encourage you to visit, states that it provides resources to the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County and was formed in 1972 in order to, quote, promote the orderly and efficient development of the physical, social, and economic elements of the district. Is anyone here reminded of the term central planning or planned economy? I encourage you, really do visit their site. My search of the website does not reveal this funding source for this organization. They specialize in grant application writing, and perhaps that is one of their funding sources. Amongst their commissioners are listed Board of Supervisor members Ann Malik, also Dennis Rooker as their treasurer. To me, this organization appears to function as what I would describe as a shadow government. It's not an elected official part of the county. It is dedicated to regulating your personal actions and property rights, all in the name of the common good as determined by their experts. Right? Does that not sound a tiny bit socialistic? No? Think of the 1988 book by Friedrich Hayek, The Fatal Conceit, subtitled The Errors of Socialism. This Nobel Prize-winning Austrian economist and philosopher noted that there exists what he called this, quote-unquote, fatal conceit, namely that one man or one group or government committee can successfully shape the world around themselves according to their wishes, good intention or otherwise. This does not mean that such groups will not keep trying. Last fall, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development awarded nearly $1 million to the Thomas Jefferson District for a three-year project to, quote, implement plans that foster, what gang, you can start probably chiming in, sustainable communities. As the U.S. government is officially broke, at least 40% of that million is borrowed from the Chinese or just printed by the Treasury, why not just give it back? We have enough laws, regulations, and procedures to deal with the future. Their related news release states that, in part, quote, the grant funds will enable the creation of a Charlottesville Regional Sustainability Implementation Plan and be used to, quote, to update, this is very important, is used to update the Albemarle County Comprehensive Plan. That's the legal document underlying everything you can and can't do in the community here. In addition, quote, there will be a focus on behavior change, and on developing sustainable habits. It sounds as though the big stick approach just got $1 million to build a really big stick, as Ed Sullivan probably used to say. $1 million in 3 years. The City, County, UVA, and the Local Energy Alliance Program, the LEAP, which I mentioned earlier, are listed as partners. The 10-page plan for your future can be viewed online. I wish you would read it. The emphasis is on implementation of sustainability is defined by this group. The project mirrors that of the action of their local climate action, mirrors that of the five-part framework with ICLEI's own five steps. The Thomas Jefferson Plan lists six products, and if you read through it, this is obviously written in the language of grant application because they call their five steps as six products. So their six products are, one, sustainability baseline, common land use transportation, integration of sustainability strategies into the comprehensive plan, code and ordinance, sustainability recommendation, and plan for behavior change process, and finally, use performance measures to monitor sustainability performance. After a while, even I can't stand to see the word sustainability, but it's built into all of this, and I'm repeating it as it appears. There's not enough time here for me to go into detail on this document. I will give you a sampling of the language, and I think the language is very revealing in their master plan, and I hope each of you will read it once again. Read it. Okay, here we go. These are all the magic words and phrases lifted directly out of this plan. Under sustainability baseline, focus on housing costs, social and economic inequality. Are you ready for this? Fresh food access, shifting transportation from single vehicles to alternate modes, transit, bike, and pedestrian, generation of greenhouse gases. Under common land use will integrate future land use and transportation plans of Albemarle Region, Charlottesville, and UVA into a transportation plan for the future. Under integrate sustainability strategies into the comprehensive plans. I'm tongue-tied on this thing. Quote, identify specific sustainability strategies for the region and update the city and county plans which are coming up for review. I might add that the county board of supervisors must vote on changes to the county's comprehensive plan, and that two members of the board of supervisors also sit on the same Jefferson District Planning Commission. So they seem to get a chance to craft the changes unofficially and vote on them later. Under review sustainability needs, and I keep on wondering, how is sustainability defined and by whom? Finally, their answer. All right, everybody, class, pay attention. This is in grant writing legalese. Quote, true sustainability is accomplished when the barriers between single-purpose organizations and plans are broken down and the focus shifts to the cross-cutting approaches that meet the needs of end users, end quote. That was an aha moment for me, I see clearly. Did you, any of you, understand what that was? All right. I just want to break the pace here because Brian Wheeler did a pretty good job here of describing what was going to be happening here this evening, talked to a number of people. And so here he's given me something which I will interject at least a couple of times from while I'm discussing the Thomas Jefferson Plan District plan there. So here in his article in Charlottesville Tomorrow, Stephen Williams is their executive director. And the quote down below, we being the Thomas Jefferson Planning District, we have no intention to dictate to people what they can do with their land or to place any new requirements on them. He added, we are not in the business of telling people what to do. We're asking what can be done on a voluntary basis to increase sustainability in the region. So remember that. So now I'm continuing reading through this plan, which they've gotten a million, which Stephen Williams and the group have gotten $1 million in 3 years to implement. All right, under regional sustainability strategies, land use, allow flexibility in meeting regulatory requirements to increase the ability to provide integrated mixed-use development. Decrease the total cost of housing. I'd like to know how they're going to do that, but anyway. Decrease the total cost of housing. Decrease energy requirements. Maybe just by telling you, you have to use less, I don't know. Develop sustainable housing strategies. Attract businesses that provide jobs for individuals with average levels of education. I don't know how they're going to define that, but that's what I want to do. Extend existing transit services out of the current core into the county. No mention of cost. It is necessary, and once again, these emphasize the necessaries, that's their language. It is necessary to develop strategies that will lead to full development of bicycle and pedestrian plans, reduce greenhouse gases, reduce energy costs. Strategies need to be developed to incorporate LEAP's recommendations in the Charlottesville and Albemarle County comprehensive plan. So those voluntary measures, which LEAP talks about helping you weatherproof your house and whatnot, they want to put into the comprehensive plan, which means it's going to be part of the building code, whether you like it or not. And you're not going to get the vote on it. They're going to say it is. They're going to tell the Board of Supervisors, this is our experts telling you this, and therefore the Board of Supervisors are going to have to think, well, these people are supposed to know what they're talking. We better go along with them or not. I don't know.
But anyway, that's what's coming down the pike. Presumably, there's no problem here because Board of Member, Supervisor Member Ann Malik is also on the board of LEAP, as is Mayor Dave Norris and David Slutsey. I sort of call it a little bit getting cozy there, but I don't know. Step 3 of the ICLEI-mandated local climate action planning process, which the county is following, is referenced as the need to develop recommendations for sustainable adaptation to climate change. Keep on looking for more definitions of sustainable. I didn't find them. Under update comprehensive plans, now we get the really scary stuff, I say. Quote, these strategies, which could require widespread changes in the land use, housing, transportation, and design elements of a typical community comprehensive plan. Such changes will require redrafting of large sections of the existing comprehensive plan elements. So Mr. Williams says here, we have no intention to dictate to people what they can do or place any new requirements. Remember that. All right. Under Charlottesville Albemarle Metropolitan Planning Organization, another group, MPO, the traditional focus of existing plans on mitigation of congestion and improving safety is noted. That's so old. That's so yesterday. But, quote, the new emphasis is to be sustainability, with a radical shift to an emphasis on vehicle miles traveled, land use techniques, behavior change to keep vehicle miles traveled within manageable limits, right, and prevent congestion. There would be performance measurement of all modes of transportation and operational analysis management such that the system functions at peak efficiency. My goodness. Review of proposals to incorporate sustainable land use practices and education to encourage behavior change. This is the language of bean counters. I mean, these are my words. This is language of the bean counters and social engineers deciding your choices for you. But Mr. Williams says, we have no intention to dictate to people what they can do. We are not in the business of telling people what to do. All right. Under code and ordinance sustainability recommendation, here it is acknowledged, quote, land use codes and regulations powerfully impact owners' rights pertaining to development type and intensity. You are darn right they do. A few sentences later comes the clincher. A review of existing codes is to be undertaken with a category devoted to those, quote, which must be replaced or eliminated due to irreconcilable conflicts with the sustainability strategies. Folks, you lose out on that one. Who gets to decide what is irreconcilable? What are these undefined sustainability strategies? We're almost to the end here. Under the plan for behavior change processes, though Mr. Williams says we're not in business of telling people what to do. Anyway, under the plan for behavior change processes, I'm quoting, this project will help identify the behaviors which will provide the greatest overall sustainability benefit. And here's one I really like. I mean, it's hard to choose here. Under research methods for achieving behavior change, it is noted that, quote, there have been some notable failures in attempts to change behavior on the part of the public. Shame on you all. It's just recent efforts, however, in this country and overseas are beginning to develop approaches that may be successful on a more consistent basis. End quote. I emphasize, this is their words, not mine. Would that be overseas approaches, such as I remember from the Manchurian candidate brainwashing in the 50s and 60s, brought up to date in the service of sustainability? I don't know, but here we may get to know how Professor Pavlov's dogs must have felt with ring the bell, do the test experiments. But I'm not afraid. I have this quote from Mr. Williams. We have no intention to dictate to people what they can do. See, it was a little bit entertaining. I wasn't sure. Under SEEK funding, quote, SEEK funding to implement the behavior change plan. From whom? And they got $1 million, but it's not enough to seek the behavioral change. So that must be a really important part of this. Under public engagement, this notably comes at the end of the process and is designed to ensure that all segments of the region become actively aware of and engaged with the process and decisions being made. End quote. Techniques include, quote, broadcast methods, outreach, a public kickoff event, citizen advisory groups, focus on citizen input meetings, and work sessions, end quote. So, folks, here is your theoretical chance to get your opinions heard. Be prepared and be aware that you will probably be competing with a variety of special interest groups, well-organized and aggressively working to see that their individual agendas are incorporated. So here the story ends for now. Almost. Last page. This group has a 3-year time frame to achieve their agenda. The dollars in special interest groups will be aligned in promoting and enforcing their visions of sustainability. Can you resist? Can you defeat this agenda? Step number one is to educate yourself as to what is going on in your local government. And if you disagree, let your board of supervisor members and city government know it at public meetings and at the ballot box. So far, our board of supervisors seem not to get it, or perhaps they don't want to get it. There has been not one question or invitation, even for informal discussions following my 2 public meeting presentations, albeit they were just 3 minutes, but they got a wad of paper backing it up. Not one member has been willing publicly to step up to the plate and defend their record and the direction they are taking the taxpayer. Mr. Boyd's recent attempt to bring up the issue at a county budget meeting found no support from any of the other board members, which I think is just atrocious. Unlike our local government, this past January, the Board of Supervisors, Carroll County, as Tom mentioned, did see the light, and they severed ties with ICLEI. One commissioner, and I think the language they used for the reason they gave why, is interesting. One commissioner noted, quote, sustainability now includes broad, overreaching restrictions on local governments that impact the free marketplace. Another commissioner stated, quote, the organization advocates a form of environmentalism that intersects environmentalism and socialism and seeks to inject government into all forms of people's lives, including land use, farming, transportation, home construction, and food production. Does that sound familiar? They noted that the plan violated private property rights and probably the U.S. Constitution. They shut down the county's sustainable development office, terminated its manager, and rejected the county's comprehensive development plan, the sustainable development scheme that had been written by ICLEI. I do hope that Albemarle County will sever its official ties to ICLEI. However, the Board of Supervisors appear convinced that ICLEI and ICLEI-provided software are indispensable and innocuous. They refuse to see themselves as part of the UN Agenda 21 mandate. However, even severing these official ICLEI ties would not be the end of it. The game plan of ICLEI has been set into motion into our local government these past several years, as I have perhaps overly documented. The environmentalist staff is the apparent source for Board of Supervisor signs opinions. The first 3 ICLEI milestones have been accomplished. The next step is herd you into the sustainability and behavior modification pens. To those in city and county government who are so dedicated to the ICLEI dogma, I suggest they read or perhaps reread, quote, The Death of Environmentalism. This is a 2004 paper by 2 environmental activists, not skeptics, but environmental activists, Ted Nordhaus and Michael Schellenberger. They were named Heroes of the Environment by Time magazine in 2008. Better yet, read their February, last month's publication now, The Long Death of Environmentalism. These environmentalists give 12 suggestions for improving our environment. And number 4 I like. Number 4 reads, quote, we need to stop imagining that we will solve global warming through behavior changes. Global development and urbanization are salutary trends, for they bring with them the opportunity for billions of us to live longer, healthier, and freer lives. To me, this is a sort of meaningful environmental policy lacking locally. Remember, it all started with a benign sales pitch, quote, unquote, there is nothing obligatory, just a statement of purpose, and we have the reassurance, as I've reiterated here, from Mr. Williams. The actions of LEAP and the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission document ICLEI in action and their real objectives. Even if our local government does not get it, I hope you will do your homework and get it, and get ready to defend your personal and private property rights. Will our Board of Supervisors be able to resist the recommendation of these activist groups? So far, the record here is not encouraging. The record in Carroll County and 3 others, which Tom mentioned, shows it can be done. And, of course, I don't have Thomas Jefferson, have a good one from him, but here I close with H.L. Mencken's quip. This is in the early 1900s, so there's nothing new here. And his little quip, quote, "The urge to save humanity is almost always a false front for the urge to rule it." Thank you.
I do want to take a moment. Both Charles and Tom have graciously agreed to hang out in the lobby. Of course, Tom will have his book. We're going to have the drawing in just a moment. So if you have any questions, I'm sure they'll be happy to answer them. But I did advertise we would give an opportunity if any of you had a question or two during the program. So does anyone have a question of either Tom or Charles? Yes. Yeah. Let us know whom you're asking the question, please.
Yeah, I'm Zach Tedia. I would like to ask a rhetorical question. Because I don't expect an answer today. But given what we've heard about Italy, what is the funding cost of the county to maintain Italy? Having set forth that premise then, we're in a crunch. Dwayne, you voted for a raise in our taxes, to which I think great exception. I offer solution here. Eliminate Italy, eliminate that whole office budget line, and you've got your money, Dwayne.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate that. I would appreciate a question directed to one of our panelists, if I may. So I may have a question of either Tom or Charles. Yes, ma'am.
I said, even just last year, that I could not name a single elected official anywhere in this country who was standing up and talking about Agenda 21 on any level. If we could get 10 counties in this country to stand up and fight back against this thing, we would start a revolution because it would go straight across. We got four. What you need to do, the folks in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, I saw a videotape of their assault on the county commissioners the other night when they got them. I don't know how they did it. They got them to back off of Ickley and kill the contract. They did it. Everything that I would say how to do it, they did the exact opposite. They did everything wrong. They went in and they just assaulted them. They mixed up ICLEI with the United Nations. That, you know, ICLEI is an NGO in the United Nations, but that doesn't make it the United Nations. And so when you go in and assault your county commissioners on, you are putting the United Nations policy right here in place because you have ICLEI here. It's true and it's not true, but you're going to get that tin hat look from them. And they're going to just immediately turn their heads off. I have just a very few copies out here in the lobby on my table, my latest issue of my newsletter, and it's entitled How to Fight Back Against Sustainable Development. I wrote this because over all these 18 years that we've been fighting this battle, everything, all of our materials have been aimed at telling you what it is. Listen to us. Listen, listen, listen. Now I'm getting calls from people saying, okay, I listened, I get it, what do I do? And I suddenly had to realize, gee, that's a whole new thing, and began to research it and find it. First and foremost, put yourself in the place of your elected officials, of what their life is like. They may just be, and probably are in many cases, good guys. Some of them aren't, but a lot of them are. And they just want to help. They got involved in government to, do something good. The minute they got into office, brand new to them, they are surrounded by these NGOs. In Warrenton, where I live, there are at least 17 of these organizations in that little town. There are hundreds of these organizations. They surround them. There are elected government agencies that bring in their people. They go to their national organization of county commissioners, and they hear these programs being told to them. They're given sample legislation. All of this is brought to them. This is the world they live in. And so to them, that is government. That's what government is doing. And along comes some tinfoil hat-wearing nut like Tom DeWeese and comes in and says, no, you know what all this stuff is? They say, oh, come on. And so the very first thing to do is not assault them that way. Put yourself in their place and understand where they're coming from. Second thing, research. Find out, just as Charles has done, all of these details. Know what it is you're fighting. Don't just run in there and say, you're taking away my property. They're going to say, where? What am I doing? Have the details so you know exactly. Go to these council meetings, these special boards and so forth. And what you're going to run into there, and at your and many of the city councils and so forth, you're going to run into the problem of consensus. This monster is taking over American policy. It is a predetermined outcome that a paid professional facilitator who makes a lot of money doing this is told at the outset, here's what we want to accomplish at the end. And when you're done, I want everybody in the audience to think it was their idea. Ah, consensus. You're not allowed to speak out. They will pick on you if you stand up and say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why would you do this or that? And they will try to marginalize you. So the rest of the group saying, why don't you just shut up and let us go on with this meeting? Why do you keep asking all these questions? That's what they'll do to you. That's not a way for us to have policy and protect our constitutional rights. What I would suggest, when you run into this, go to the meeting not alone, when you know consensus is going to be in place and it's everywhere. If there's only three of you, create the traditional triangle. One of you over here, one of you over here, one of you over here. One of you is going to lead. Get up and start to ask your questions. And when they start putting you down, the one over here stands up and says, wait a minute, why don't you ask their question? And they start to put that one down, this one stands up and says the same thing. Wait a minute, why don't you answer their question? You will turn this meeting into utter chaos. They will not be able to get it done. South Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina, they had a meeting there where yet some new NGO popped up with yet some new plan to lock away thousands of acres of land, and they had their prerequisite public meeting. And they were shocked because not three people showed up. 100 property owners showed up, and they knew the game that was being played. And they started asking questions. Who are you? Who funds you? Where did you come from? What's this plan all about? They adjourned the meeting. 2 weeks later, they attempted it again. Facilitator standing there starts it. Within 2 minutes, the same 100 property owners showed up. Within 2 minutes, they were having a debate back and forth across the room about freedom. Whereupon, within 15 minutes of this meeting, the chairman of this group gets up and says, I am adjourning this meeting because this meeting, are you ready, has reached the wrong consensus. Glory. So this is how you have to fight back. If you get elected officials who are deriding you when you're asking these questions and you're getting nowhere, you just don't feel that you can get anything done, then show up next time with more people. And I would highly suggest you take a picture of that elected official that is blocking you, that is smirking, that is laughing about you, put his picture on a poster and put the question in, with his name, why won't you answer the question? And have a rally outside City Hall or out here or wherever and put the pressure on him. They don't like that kind of pressure. This is how we're going to have to fight back, because they are putting a tyranny on you and they're telling you they're not doing it. Everywhere you turn, don't know anything about that. Nope, no equity here. Don't know anything about any of this stuff. I don't know what you're talking about. They do know what you're talking about, and they don't want you to know about it. They don't want to talk about it, and you have got to take it out into the light of day.
I'm going to tell you, Tom basically, well, more eloquently than I ever could have done, did my conclusion, which was going to be, what should we do now, folks? You just heard it from with all respect and no the horse's mouth. This is the gentleman who knows exactly where to go with this. Now, I do want to state that, and I said this earlier in the beginning, you know, we all didn't know about this several years ago when this was passed. And I believe that at least some on the Board of Supervisors, and I think Ken Boyd in particular, has demonstrated a very open mind about this. He talked to Charles about coming in to speak to the Board of Supervisors. I know he's tried to bring up some issues with them with not very much success. So we need to make sure that we are targeting our attention and our focus on those who aren't getting it yet and who aren't listening. So, you know, it sounds like I'm giving Ken a pass here, but he has been working, as he's been learning about this, a little more on our behalf. So I do want to particularly find out where Dwayne Snow and Lindsay Dorier and my mind is blanking, forgive me, I've been... Rodney Thomas, thank you. Where those three gentlemen in particular are standing on this at this time. As was demonstrated by Dennis Rooker's unfortunate smear of the Tea Party, I thought, and that's going to be discussed soon too. And Ms. Malik, I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of success there, but we do have 4-2 in terms of Republicans on the County Board of Supervisors, and I think we need to politely but firmly encourage those gentlemen to look at this issue. And hopefully we can bring it around to where, as Charles said, you know, at this point kicking $1,200 off the budget, well, yes, it's $1,200, but there's so much more involved in this now. And you know, the hen house, it's open. I mean, it's here, and this is being implemented already in our community. So it's not going to be just as easy as them scratching out a line item on the budget and saying, okay, Ickley's gone. It's not that simple. So what I'm going to do is, because I'm trying to be very conscious of the time, folks, I want to go ahead and do the drawing for the book and ask you please to stop by, thank Tom, thank Charles out in the lobby, and to ask them any questions. Please take any literature that they have for you to take home. Tell people you came here tonight. Unfortunately, and I don't know why, neither TV station, and they were invited multiple times, did not come here tonight. I do want to thank Charlottesville Tomorrow, and I do want to thank Seaville. They both sent media representatives here, so we are receiving some coverage. I don't know why the TV stations weren't here, but it is up to all of you to take the information you've had tonight, tell a friend, tell a coworker, go to the websites, get the information, and through the Jefferson Area Tea Party, this discussion is long from over. And it's going to be long from over even if this budget passes here in a few weeks with the $1,200 for Ickley. So we're not going to let go of this so easily because it's so important to everybody in our community. Nancy, would you please randomly pull a number?